Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. I'm really excited to have Raj Singh here. He's a VP of product over at Mozilla, and he's working on some new SMB tools and other things, but just an all-around, when I was preparing for this interview, really knows a lot about product management and Gen AI. Really excited to have you here, Raj. You want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a VP of product at Mozilla, focused on building new tools for small business. I like to tell people my career has been mostly a map. I've jumped around into passion areas. I haven't followed the traditional ladder approach. Most of it's been all startups, almost all consumer facing, which is quite atypical. A mix of failures and a mix of exits, a mix of bootstrapped and a mix of venture backed. So I've been around the block and have worked in a variety of consumer categories.
Yeah. Awesome. I was reading some of the posts that you recently made. I wonder if you could share some of the things you've been talking around product management and AI and just everyone just being a better individual contributor, leveraging AI. Maybe you can share some of your thoughts and information you've been sharing out there.
Sure. Yeah. In my opinion, Gen AI has been probably the greatest unlock of like human creative potential. And the reason I say that is everybody has ideas. Ideas are a dime a dozen, as we say. People have lots of things that they've wanted to build, but they can't build it because maybe they don't have access to that electrical engineer. Maybe they don't know how to design that particular piece of medicine, whatnot, right? Now we have Gen AI that's democratizing all that fractional expertise. And so they can actually express all that creative energy into something. And so I feel like this is just unlocking massive amounts of potential and growth and this sort of democratized access to fractional expertise. And then of course, now bring this into the workplace, it's just been a massive productivity unlock for so many people. And a lot of it, frankly, is not the tools themselves anymore. It's about the archetypes. It's, are you high agency? Are you a consummate learner? Do you want to go faster? And so that's where we're seeing a delta. And so a lot of this discussion and talk that I've had around the super individual contributor and the super org is really trying to reframe your mindset. Thinking about maybe I've been doing things a certain way for a long time, but now it's time to revisit some of those assumptions and say, maybe I need to change how I approach my work. Maybe I'm more of a conductor. I'm not the actual doer, whatnot. And so a lot of that reframing of thinking, whether at the individual or the organizational level, needs to happen because this transformation is happening all so fast that if you don't respond or react, not sure where you're going to land.
Yeah, that's great. And like, how about, I'm sure you've worked with a lot of product managers and what kind of advice do you have for product managers and leveraging AI just to kind of express their creative process and get work done? What's your thoughts around that?
My general feeling is the PM role is one of the most sort of multifaceted roles in an organization and from a cross-functional perspective. And in many ways, it's one of the first roles to most benefit from Gen AI just because it is so cross-functional. Engineering, certainly another bucket. At this point, practically every role. What I have found when I talk to people who have not necessarily taken that step or like saying they're using ChatGPT, but just once in a blue moon, or they haven't really integrated the workflow, I tell them to do two things. One, go find peers, and they should be peers, meaning they should be people doing functionally similar things, and ask them how are they using Gen AI in their work. And the reason is so much of this is discovery. So you need to see how other people are using things, and then you can see how you can apply it in your way. And one of the things that's difficult with Gen AI is it is a learn by doing. It's like you can watch people drive a car, but you don't really know how to drive a car until you drive a car yourself. And so in a similar fashion or vein, you have to go and go through the pain. You have to go and prompt. You have to see it, why it doesn't work, why it does work. And so that's learn from your peers and just go and try it out is definitely the first unlock. The second thing is document your day. So this is very counterintuitive, but actually go and write down what you're doing every 10 minutes throughout your day, and then actually give that to AI and ask it how it could have helped you throughout your day. And you'd be surprised because it'd come back saying, oh, you could have done this. Because again, it's all about discovery. So as you discover these use cases and as you try and go through that pain, it just becomes more and more like easier to use. And I think one of the most fascinating metrics when you look at like the sort of retention DAU, the retention waterfall chart from OpenAI, how much of it is really a smile curve where the retention is actually going up over time, which is phenomenal for a consumer kind of product.
Oh, you mean retention of ChatGPT?
Yes. Yeah. User, yeah. Cohort user retention on ChatGPT, week 0, week 5, week 10, et cetera.
So what? That's kind of interesting. Every 10 minutes, document what you're doing, and then feed that to Gen AI or ChatGPT. What kind of aha moments did you have when you did that, or even colleagues?
I continue to lean on Gen AI as my assistant, right? It's like the assistant I never had. It's your chief of staff, whatever you want to call it. My use of it is increasing every day. Like, it's remarkable how much time I spend with it. Like, my podcast consumption has gone down because I prefer to just have discussions with AI during my dog walks, right? I'll just open up, go into voice mode, and learn about some topic that I don't know a lot about, which is just fascinating,
That's
right? The
neat.
fact that I can do these sorts of things. There are a laundry list of activities. Like, currently within Solo, one of the products I'm managing within Mozilla, which is an AI website builder, solos.ai. For small business owners, we're adding a paid capability. There's so many questions around the product spec, around how you do Stripe integration, how do you handle countries you don't support. I'll just go to ChatGPT. What's the normal workflow in this particular situation? What do people usually do? Or how do SaaS apps deal with cancellation flows that trigger from deleting their user account? But things like that, whatever. So it's just remarkable, like how many questions and cases come up, not work related. I'm going through a significant amount of remodeling, home construction right now at my house. And without ChatGPT, you would be pouring through Reddit threads for days and days, certainly missing dozens and dozens of things. I'm literally spending maybe 25, 30 minutes a day learning about a new, let's call it, craft each day. Like, today I'm going deep into HVAC, like during one of my walks. The next day I'm going deep into like sheetrock, right? I'm going like, you name it. And what does that do? Sure, I still don't know a lot, right? I'm not building it, doing it, I'm learning, but I can ask much more intelligent questions. And when you think about the workplace, so much of meetings and so much of your asynchronous discussion and so much of just work is frankly just asking the right questions at the right time, which asking the right question is a function of like knowledge, taste, judgment, sensibility, right? Some of those things ChatGPT isn't giving to you. You still have to have some intuition. You still have to have some taste, but it's giving you more knowledge. And so you can ask better questions. And then that ultimately, the goal or hope would be that yields a better outcome.
That's some good advice. That's funny. Yeah. A lot of times these guys, they don't want to do a certain thing for you, even though it's probably the best the way the home could look, or you can remodel something, but it's just difficult or challenging for them to do. And I guess by getting that knowledge, you can ask better questions of them and then get the outcome you want. And yeah, that's interesting. Now, what Mozilla.ai, what is that all about?
Yeah, so we're doing a lot of things within AI at Mozilla, right? So we have, for those that don't know, there's a Mozilla Foundation, which is the nonprofit. They're doing a number of things around pushing open source AI, defining what open source is, releasing a model weights model. We believe it should be open, right? So everyone can take advantage. In addition to that, things around ethical AI hallucinations, ethical training data sets, et cetera. So there's a lot of, let's call it, activist, lobbyist, legislative sort of activities that the foundation is focused on. There's Mozilla Corporation, which is the Firefox and new products, things that I'm focused on. We use AI in numerous ways, obviously bringing AI into the browser, where a lot of our new products are leveraging or incorporating AI in some way to make your life easier. Internally, we talked earlier about SuperIC, SuperOrg. We use AI in our day-to-day work, whether it's in development engineering, whether it's in design, whatnot, right? Then we have another subsidiary called Mozilla.ai. They're focused on new projects, so they're looking at a longer time frame in around AI. So they're also building new products, but with a different perspective and not necessarily with a corporation hat. So it doesn't necessarily have to be profit on day one. It's a different perspective. So there's various sorts of initiatives that we're doing in and around AI and Gen AI. We think there's passing trends and there's trends that are transformative. And I don't think we don't we and I don't think of AI as a passing trend. I've been in this category for a long time. I was actually the first .AI domain in 2011 or 2010. A whole crazy backstory calling
Wow.
the Anguilla Islands. This is a transformation that's as big as mobile or as big as the internet.
Now, what was that URL that you got? The first .AI
I
URL?
had a, my two startups ago. So I joined Mozilla. They acquired my last company, Pulse, is doing meeting summarization. My previous startup, Tempo AI, was a smart calendar that was acquired by Salesforce. We were looking for a domain and we were like, oh, it'd be cool to do, because we were very AI heavy. We're using semantic analysis to help you prepare for meetings. This is all kind of all cutting edge stuff in 2010, 2011 timeframe, where it'd be cool if we have a .AI domain before that was even a thing. And so I called the Anguilla Islands. They set up a whole registrar in the library in a room, because they never really had a public-facing DNS server type thing set up, whatnot. It ended up being the first .AI domain, like from a third-party private registration.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to be able to claim that. Now, what's your point of view on software development and AI and the future of software development and just talking about how that's affecting that whole industry?
I think so. If you take like the English language, English is actually a lot harder for a computer to understand than code, because code is Boolean. It's deterministic. Either it works or it doesn't work. But English, it's nuanced. Like the way you express it, your tonality of the voice, the word choices can dramatically change what you mean. Sarcasm, who knows, right? And so for a machine, surprisingly, code is a lot easier to solve. And in many ways, computers, which are excellent at deterministic workflows, like execute this workflow to do X or Y, should be excellent at coding. And that's what we're seeing, right? And I think if you look at engineers and the transformation that they're going through, and to be clear, this is not just engineering, they are moving into a role that I would very much call like a conductor, right? They're a reviewer. Instead of necessarily writing the code, they're writing the instructions, they're reviewing the output, they're determining if the approach is right. There may be putting into spec like how to approach the architecture, but then they're delegating the actual coding portion of it itself to the AI. And I actually did a rubric, I published it on LinkedIn just as a litmus test on how to think about this, where level one to level four, right? Like level one might be you're just using ChatGPT or GitHub Copilot, which is just basic autocomplete or whatnot, right? But level four is where you're going end to end, where you have a ticket in Trello or Linear or Jira or whatever you're using. And it automatically, an agent will automatically read the ticket, execute it, submit a PR, which you can then human review, right? So human in the loops aren't going away. You're still doing judgment and sensibility, but the context windows are expanding with these different models. So they can basically have more and more of the code base in memory, right? And it's really CPU bound, to be honest. But if we had the compute, the inference to basically run the whole product in memory and make those changes, we're getting to a point where AI is generating 50, 60, 70% of the code, depending on project, right? Maybe more, right? Now, the last mile still remains and sensibility still remains, and you still have to have some technical understanding to be able to debug and whatnot, right? So those things are still there, but it's just the day-to-day role has shifted. And I think it's been difficult for some engineers to maybe even make that transformation. And again, this is not engineering specific, but in some ways it's, whoa, I'm not coding as much anymore. This feels wrong. I'm spending a lot more time reviewing code and writing instructions.
And do you think like large enterprise apps or commercial apps, what do you think what does the future of R&D look like at a SaaS company?
I think so. SaaS is interesting, that category. You said SaaS specifically. I think if you look at enterprise spend, there's certain a lot of products are purchased because they need systems of records. Right, you have Workday in the workplace because you need a system of record for all your human capital details, right? You have Greenhouse in the workplace, or I'm just giving blanket examples. There's multiple examples in each of these buckets because you need an ATS that is your system of record. These systems of records at the end of the day are effectively databases with workflows on top of it, right? You have your CRM, Salesforce or whatnot, because you need a place to capture all your lead and contact information. The question now is, and you look at the sort of spend from these enterprises, right? They buy the software and then there's significant spend sometimes on top of it in the way of professional services or whatnot, where they customize the workflow specific to their organization, like how the approvals work, what fields they want, whatnot, right? So on one hand, a lot of that development was generally outsourced to systems integrators, third parties, whatever, not usually done in-house. A lot of that AI is really good at because it's like known systems. It's very easy to just vibe code it almost internally. On the other hand, there's also this question of, do I need these full systems of records? Can I build something lighter weight internally that meets my needs through an internal team, through vibe coding, that's sufficiently good enough and save massive amounts of dollars? I think there's a lot of price pressure on SaaS right now because I think the number of options that they have has dramatically increased. And I think there's a desire to say, because the natural end state of any sort of enterprise product is something that looks like Microsoft Word from 2000, 50,000 features, 50,000 options. That's by definition because they're trying to build something, everything for everyone, right? But the average enterprise is using 5% of those features. And so there is this natural question of what is this going to look like? Are they going to reshift dollars? It's going to create price pressure. So I'm curious to see how all this plays out. CIO perspective, of course, I don't want to pay for 50 subscriptions. I'd rather have two, right? And of course, you have the hyperscalers like the Microsofts and whatnot that are going to continue to package more and more into the suite, right? So they're giving everything for a single SKU, which has dramatic benefits from a sort of retention. I don't know how it's all going to play out, but I think it's interesting times. I think Sam Altman had that great quote, which is, "This is the fast fashion era of SaaS." And I don't know if it's that far, but like definitely in the startup ecosystem, they've never had more choices.
Yeah, if you ever look at the enterprise, there is so much data, bad data, systems, and so much going on. And there's a how is the CIO going to manage all that if you have a whole bunch of vibe coded apps, or just the complexity, or and complexity is the nice word of it, of what's happening there. Do you see that really what you just said being able to work in there?
I think it's not really what I see. It's like what's actually happening, right? Definitely right now there's probably three or four different stratospheres, right? There's all in with a little bit of hedging. So it's like I'm a Microsoft shop and we pretty much have all their products and just whatever hypothetical, and maybe I have a little bit of hedging, I have backup here and there, right? Then you have like the company that's best of breed in every category. So they're maybe using Slack, maybe they're using Zoom, they're using Google Apps, so they're paying a lot of SaaS subscriptions. Then you have a whole another category of companies that are like, you know what? These four things I want to bring in-house. We don't need the full-blown Salesforce CRM, or we're just going to get the basic version of Salesforce and we'll do all the customization ourselves. Who knows? And then you have another bucket where there's just a new set of competitors because it's so easy to spin up a competitor now. Well, the one thing about SaaS products, which is very different to consumer, when you build consumer products, you're dealing with emotions. I like to tell people, like, how does this product make you feel? Because you're like, the desire to take the next step in that product, the desire, what's the delight that gets you to come back? Do I feel satisfaction? How much friction is there? Like these sorts of things, when you're dealing with consumer, there's like underlying like Maslow style, like needs, whatever. It's a very different kind of game. It's very much about psychology. When you're dealing with enterprise, it's very usually very clear. This is the problem. This is what they'll pay for. This is what you have to build. That's fantastic for AI, right? That's like where AI does really well, right? Like in terms of, hey, this is what I need. This is exactly how it works. Can you just make this workflow work? It's very deterministic, the workflow, right? Like it's much easier. It's like the ability to vibe code it now as a startup is phenomenal. The hard part now is frankly not building. The hard part now is distribution. And to be honest, it's been distribution for a long time. But distribution and awareness and noise, it's never been more crowded, and no and the signal noise ratio is off the charts. That sort of combination of things is just crazy now.
And how do you think things will change where you have your UX team, your design team, your product team? How do you see that transforming?
So we're already seeing a lot of bleeding along the edges, right? Where we're basically seeing more overlap than we've ever seen before. And this has created a lot of uncomfortable, it's made some people uncomfortable, right? Just between different groups. Like all of a sudden PMs are producing design, right? If you think about PRDs, those are really just communication tools. Now they're producing prototypes. It's a better communication tool. It's a higher fidelity communication tool, right? You're seeing PMs or marketing or GTM folks going to legal with specific questions, like, which they would not have been aware of before because they're using ChatGPT to be better informed about advertising tactics in Europe or whatnot, right? I think this sort of bleed along the edges is the new normal. Like we shouldn't think of it as hyper isolated. And I think our siloed functional roles, fractional expertise is now available to everyone. It doesn't mean your functional experts don't go away, but everyone can now provide feedback at some level across different roles. And I think companies themselves, this whole mantra around, oh, we're going to replace humans with AI. I don't buy any of that. Like, I think actually
Me
what's
neither.
happening is companies are just going to get more aspirational. They're going to try to figure out how to become trillion-dollar companies. They want to go even faster. So they're going to continue to hire more. It's just that the role has changed a little bit. At some level, you need to be a little bit more generalist to show good taste, good have sensibility, but you also need to be an archetype that's high agency and wants to get stuff done, because this is much more of a, the winners are those that are the consummate learners, the self-drivers, who are just motivated to go figure it out.
Love it. Love it. Good, great answer, Raj. And what's your point of view on where we're all losing 30% plus front of funnel through PPC and SEO? Everything's changing now. What are your thoughts around overcoming that?
SEO is still there because search is very hard to, with all the hoo-hurrah over the last 2 years. I think Google maybe has slipped 1% market share in 2 years. It's still predominant path. And there's still more searches every day, right? Like, tomorrow there'll be more searches than today, and the day after there'll be more searches than. So search isn't going anywhere. But what we are seeing is significantly more referral traffic coming from AI chat. And that's also not going away. And we're seeing e-commerce discussions happening in AI chat. We're seeing, in my case, like construction recommendations. You're seeing all kinds of those sorts of things happening now. So now the game is what's also described as AEO or GEO, which is answer engine optimization or generative engine optimization, which is a whole different game, right? SEO, high authority backlinks, high authority domains, right? Forbes, CNN, et cetera, right? Fox, whatever, right? GEO, AEO, high authority UGC, right? So it's like Reddit comments, affiliate comments, Trustpilot reviews, Wikipedia, which is high notability. It's a very different kind of game. And so you're
What's
seeing
you what'd you say UGC? Is that user group
user
content?
generated content,
User
right?
generated content,
And the
okay.
reason it's about high authority UGC is because, ironically, LLMs don't want to cite from high authority domains, because content on high authority domains are strictly high authority domains, because content on high authority domains may be slop, right? They don't want to cite from AI generated content. They want to cite from things that are most likely human authored. And so they look at sources where the content is most likely human authored. And so if you look at Reddit with moderators, it's very human authored, right? And so it tends to be cited a lot. If you look at Wikipedia, it's human reviewed, and there's a notability to even be mentioned in Wikipedia. So that's more likely to be cited, right? You look at review sites, same kind of thing, because they have so many bot detectors and whatnot to shut down AI. So in many ways, LLMs want to cite from more likely to be human authored. But in any case, my macro point here is growth has always been hard, right? Like in 2000, 2001, 2002, PR was a very effective strategy, right? Email spam was very effective. You didn't get a lot of email, right? 2007, people were blasting the Facebook wall, 2008 timeframe. And literally anybody who built anything blasting the Facebook wall, a la Zynga, would have just taken off, right? In that timeframe, right? 2010, 2011, the App Store, right? If you were featured, you were crushing it. Just getting featured was the game, right? And this sort of continues and continues. 2015, 2016, we had the emergence of this like smart SDR, now called AI SDR, right? It would buy lead lists, nurture those, or enrich those leads, and do targeted email, drip campaigns, whatnot, cold email, spam, whatever you want to call it. The game just keeps changing and evolving, right? I don't see that going away. The signal noise ratio, sure, off the charts. It's never been harder, but at the same time, there are tactics to drive growth. And particularly as someone who spends a lot of time in consumer, I think a lot about PLG, and I think about loops, and I think about playing on a psychology to drive growth. But for enterprise, like, the playbook is still there, and they just have to execute against it.
And so what do you think about SDRs and AI SDRs? Do they work?
I
Or
think,
could they work? Like, people are still building, but do you think they can work or do they work?
at the right, for the right ACV products and at the right volume, I think they do work. I think the issue is the cost of AI SDR has become effectively democratized. Like, it required in-house expertise to pull off these kinds of activities in 2019, 2020. At this point, it's available to everyone, right? It's almost turnkey. I can literally go to a website, literally hit a couple buttons. I have a lead list to, and boom, like a drip campaign created, and boom, it's like starting a pop-up emails, right? With warmed up domains and across multiple domains and whatever, right? So that, because it's now been democratized, the actual customers that are receiving this stuff, they're receiving volumes of inbound that they've never received before, whether they're getting hit on email, LinkedIn DM, Twitter DM, whatever, right? And it does have an impact, right? Because the response rates are going down, sure. But it's still working. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it. So it still works, just like how programmatic SEO still works, right? People are using tools to basically do AI-generated slop to mass produce corporate blogs, right? You could argue, like, that's just a waste. You're producing like thousands of articles of garbage, arguably. Now, I would be careful to use the word garbage, because Google has taken a different perspective now, where previously they may have been downranking slop. Now they're saying, no, we're just downranking low-quality content, because honestly, there's tons of low quality human authored content farms too, right? That are effectively producing slop. So at this point, we're just looking for high quality stuff. So AI SDR is certainly still working if you configure it, parameterize it, all that stuff correctly. But again, it's harder than it was before, and in that it's become democratized. And again, like as in the past, typically high ACV products, very specific buyer in mind, that's where it works. You try to apply this like blanket on some kind of consumer app, it's not going to work.
And what do you think the where's the next greenfield or the next go-to-market strategy that, is good and works?
A lot of SaaS right now is focused on programmatic TikTok. It's a programmatic short form video. This is like its own pseudoscience because it's non-trivial, right? Like most social media tools want native. They want you to record in the app itself and post from the app itself. So just the fact that you're trying to schedule and post through a third party app in itself is part of the problem because they don't really have APIs. There's a lot of hacks and workarounds to do this. People are literally buying devices, setting up pseudo device farms, and then using basically applications on their desktop that effectively control the cursor on each of those Android devices to then simulate clicks into different things, right? So it's effectively a device bot farm, but we're seeing it work. The social media rule has been remarkably consistent. Post a lot, post frequently, and you'll have success, right? So it doesn't matter what the quality is, right? We're seeing people use AI generated avatar hooks, usually transitioning, these are all standard templates, transitioning into screen shares with maybe some audio over and then some CTAs at the end of the short form video. And then they're programmatically posting this across maybe 10 to 15, 20, 50 different accounts, 2, 3 times a day. And then they're seeing some of the stuff hit and then they double down on what's hits and then they run ads against what hit, right? Because that's the game. When you have a tweet that goes viral, you run an ad against it. Because the whole thing now is find your content that works and then make it last 3 weeks, right? So people are repurposing like crazy. But this whole like growth, SEO, content, marketing, all this, it's just its own world and game. And I think there's a completely different topic around the in-shittification of the internet, right? And what is this all doing? But at the end of the day, don't hate the player, hate the game, right? Like we're playing the game, right?
And what do you think about ABM?
ABM, is that the
Account-based marketing.
what? So what was that?
ABM, account-based
Oh,
marketing.
account-based marketing. I'm probably tell me what ABM is.
So there's tools out there, you get signals out in the internet that certain accounts are looking for certain types of products
Got
or solutions. So then you market to them to bring them into your digital properties. And then once they're engaged on your digital properties, then you do a whole nother round of warming them up and marketing to them to effectively try and convert them.
I have not tried. So I remember being pitched some tools in the past. Now, just to be clear, like a lot of the SaaS strategies I haven't employed because I do consumer. But I've certainly been pitched by folks that could like somehow reverse engineer and figure out who's visiting my site so I can then retarget. Which I guess is what ABM is. I never heard that acronym before. I think the point here though is not what I think about ABM. I think the point is Gen AI has enabled vibe coding, which has enabled me to test numerous channels, numerous strategies, numerous tactics faster than before because I can build them out faster than before. I can build automation faster than before. I don't need as much headcount because so much of the work that we're describing here, frankly, used to be under the bucket of growth operations. But you don't need as many operations people if you can do this more programmatically. And so I think that's just basically, again, it's just leveling up the game. It's more democratized. Everyone can play.
Yeah, that's good. And I tell you, do you have any thoughts or advice or input on how to get customer feedback? Because everyone loves to ghost you, even people that use your product. Like, what, any advice around that?
So I can only share what I do from consumer, right? Because I mostly build consumer. And usually what I do is during the consumer building part of the product, like I am getting feedback rampantly from friends and whatnot, but pretty much every person I talk to in that period, I add them to my personal mailing list. And then I eventually will send an email saying, hey, you're on this list because we talked about the XYZ and we're now starting, would love to get your feedback on this. So that basically becomes my initial alpha group. It's like the first 200 is in the 6 months of every person I talk to where I talk about that product. And that's how I seed it, right? And then of course the goal here is you want to get to a point where your user feedback is pretty much coming to you. Like you don't have to pull it, it's being pushed, meaning it's support emails, it's reviews, it's things like that. So, but that's typically how I seed for consumer. I spend a lot of time thinking about K factor in products, like how can I drive virality, right? So I look at people think of, oh, I can add a share button here. I'm like, no. What's the underlying motivation? Does sharing this product make it better for me? Does sharing this product make me money or help me meet a partner or make me famous, right? Like you really have to like map out, is it true virality or is it just, oh, we're just going to apply consumerization of IT kind of tactics, which is, it's like nonsense. I see so much of this stuff in enterprise where people just blanket assume these sort of things work, but consumer building is so much about psychology.
Yeah, that's some really good feedback there. I think it's the same for the enterprise too. What's in it for them and how do you make them take action? And so you talked about loops. Like, you want to share any of your thoughts around loops? Like, how do you create the loops and what do you mean by that?
And just to be clear, to close out that last thought, when you think about enterprise, there's two buyers, right? There's the end user, but there's also the buyer, right? When you think about consumer, there's only one buyer. It's a different kind of game. When I talk about loops, what I mean is, does the action then yield somebody to then go invite another person? You're creating a loop, right? And so usually, if you look at the K factor formula, it's like, how many times do you click this action? And when you click this action, how many times does it reach? How many people does it reach? So I click this share button, let's say like 0.1 time per user, right? You normalize it based on your total number of users. Then you do each time they click share, it goes to four people. And then how many of those people convert into a new user? You multiply all that out, you get a K factor. If it's less than one, you're not a viable product, right? You want to get that number greater than one, right? And so then the question is, okay, can I increase one of these values by adding an incentive? Look at Dropbox, like you get more storage if you invite. So they incentivized it, right? That still probably didn't get the K factor above one. But I don't know. I don't know. I actually don't know. My guess is it probably was still below one.
It's hard to get above one, the K
It's hard to get
factor.
above one. The reason Facebook, LinkedIn are above one is because they're inviting seven people at a time, right? They're inviting 25 friends. So one of those numbers is crazy high when you multiply that stuff out. Ultimately, what you're looking at is the blend between performance marketing, paid acquisition, and organic. And to the extent that more and more can be organic, gives you huge advantages, right? I'm sure the blended CAC for Dropbox is way lower than Box in the early days, right? And I'm sure the blended CAC for Zoom is way lower than BlueJeans was back in the day or WebEx, right? Because Zoom just had natural consumer organic uptake. If you can crack the organic long tail uptake game, you're in a different ball game.
Yeah. And what do you see a big future? I think you already ended this earlier, but I'm going to ask it anyways. What do you think the future of PPC is?
Is that the
Pay per
pay per
click.
click? Yeah, pay per click. Yeah. I don't see that stuff going away. So when I think of ad ecosystem, and which is, by the way, extremely mature, I don't see that going away. I think the way I think of it differently. Like whether you're PPC, whether you're PPI, whether you're CPA, whether you're whatever, right? Like whether you're charging on the click, on the action, on the impression, CPM, like in the end, it's going to be normalized back down to a ROAS. In the end, is it actually yielding a new paid subscriber? Is it actually yielding a return? So I don't really care what the metrics are leading up to that ultimate ROAS or eCPM, but so I don't see those going away. I think the bigger question in the ad ecosystem is much more around there's legislation on one side that's making things like ad targeting and attribution and those things harder, which is difficult, obviously, for the industry. They have to react. On the other side, you have AI massively giving advantages to those people that have tons of first-party data, right? You look at Facebook, whatnot, right? They just have so much data already where the long tail and the startups can't even compete because they don't have that first-party data, right? And then you have, and you, it's also, you look at things like, geez, what's the new automated advertising there on Facebook now? Or performance like PMax, things like that, right? Like where you're basically not even turning the dials anymore. The entire system is just completely automated because they have so much data and they're outperforming like human ad operations people now, which is incredible. So I think the bigger question now is, as you see the shift from search potentially to AI chat over time, what does that look like? And AI chat has much higher intent data. Perplexity has been making that argument for ages, right? Oh, our intent data is better, so we'll drive a better CTR, but certainly they're not necessarily surfacing ads as frequently or as often, right? Whereas a lot of the sort of user experience within Google effectively recycles clicks. Like you click an ad, which then makes you click back to click another ad, or you click an ad and then refreshes the search results into another ad, right? So there's a lot of like little levers that they tune there to drive a certain sort of performance. I think the industry, advertising in general, is one of the most efficient industries in the tech world. And so by very definition, they always strive for squeezing 0.1% edge or macro. And so they will figure it out.
And what question didn't I ask you that you thought that you'd want to share?
Oh, I don't. We covered a lot of bases. I wasn't sure what we were gonna necessarily cover. Data is obviously a broad topic. I certainly want to make sure I have a chance to talk about some of the stuff I'm doing at Mozilla.
Yes, tell us, what are you doing at Mozilla?
Yeah, obviously Firefox. I'm gonna have to plug that for everyone. We're doing a lot of great things. It's still the We're the independent browser. We're not one of the hyperscalers that's trying to sell all your data. And then I think I'm focused on new products for solopreneurs, small business owners within Mozilla. They acquired my last company. I kind of landed here a couple of years ago. One of them is Solo. Definitely check it out. AI website builder for service providers. We're looking at this category specifically because the fastest growing business in the US and frankly the world is the freelancer or the side hustle, right? And so a lot of our thinking was like, oh, how can we build agents? How can we build tools to democratize the business owner? Hey, post-COVID, people want to work from home. They want more control of their day. They want to control their own hours. They want to focus on their passion. Can we give them tools to make their lives easier? And felt this is an underserved segment. Working on Solo is a good example. Another example of a product we have that's relatively new for social media is called Postful. Postful.ai, they can check it out. So that's my quick Mozilla plug.
Beautiful. Thanks for that. Yeah. And you work on those products. Your team works on
Yes.
those products.
Yes, correct. Yes.
And were they vibe coded?
We might be vibe coding prototypes or exploring different user experiences, things like that for sure. Even some of the support tools that are behind it, even some of the command line interface tools behind it, whatnot. But the products itself were human authored, but certainly with AI assisted, where I wouldn't be surprised 10, 20, 30, 40%, 50% of the code is increasingly AI generated.
You need scalability and product, need the human in there. I'm a big proponent. Yeah, developers aren't going anywhere, but I share your point of view. Maybe not as grand as the orchestrator, but certainly being more productive. And but yeah, we need people studying computer science, and we need more critical thinkers and to create more and leverage AI, but we still need a human in the loop. At least that's my point of view. So I'd share that. Roger, if people wanted to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
So I'm public. You can find me on LinkedIn. I think my email's there too. I'm on Twitter at Mobile Raj. I'm on Threads. It's synchronized like cross post, also at Mobile Raj Tree. This shouldn't be difficult to find me. I show up somewhere on Google. I know Raj Singh's a very popular name. It's everyone's nickname, but they should be able to find me.
Awesome. Raj, thank you so much. You covered so much ground. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your point of view and your thoughts with everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional, and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.